said 9 to 9:40, so we're going to start at 9, and we're done by 9:40. Just like to again thank Kurt and Melissa for opening up their home. I think the last time I was in the Stein's house was for a tzedakah organization, the time before that for a siyum, and each time I'm here it's for another Dvar Mitzvah, and just as they make their home available for mitzvahs, so too should their home be open to all the brachos that mitzvahs bring. Every mitzvah observance requires hachana, requires preparation, particularly mitzvahs that are time-bound. Yamim Tovim, holidays, festivals require preparation. Rosh Hashanah has Elul, Shavuos has the weeks of the Omer, and so on and so forth. And Avelus is no different. Mourning, the morning of Tisha B'Av, requires preparation. If we don't prepare in advance, we will not experience the morning of the day properly. There's a very interesting parallel in this week's parsha. The parsha begins recounting the travels of Klal Yisrael through the desert, and we're told by Chazal that there are 42 stops, 42 encampments of the Bnei Yisrael, and later on in the parsha we have another 42. We have another manifestation of the number 42. There are 42 Arei Miklat, places of cities of refuge for a person who has accidentally murdered someone else. And here too there are 42 of them. Added to the main ones, there are an additional 42. The parallel jumps out at us, and the Kli Yakka says, yeah, it's meant to be a parallel. He says, Arbarim Ushtaim, Ir Keneged Membez Chanuyas She Yisrael Chanu Bahem, paralleling the 42 encampments. It bothered me, there are really six primary cities of refuge, and then the Torah says you add 42 more. What happens to the additional six? There's no parallel, it's really 48. So I think the answer is in Halacha. The Gemara tells us that a person who, God forbid, killed someone by accident, and he had to flee to a city of refuge, so if he's in the primary six, even if he's not aware of it, the refuge works. It atones for his negligence. But if a person runs to the secondary 42, he must be aware that he has gone into Golus. He must be aware of the fact that he is there, otherwise it doesn't work. The parallel is the 42 cities of refuge to the 42 encampments of Klal Yisrael in the desert, which the Svarim tell us are supposed to parallel the Jews' travels through Golus. When they left Mitzrayim, there was a purification process that had to be achieved. And that purification is not achieved unless we are aware of the Golus. The same way one must be aware, must have Das, must recognize the Golus of the Ari Miklat, he must recognize the Golus, the exile that we are in and that Klal Yisrael was in the desert. So Golus requires awareness. For the Golus to serve its purpose, to drive the message home to us, we have to have Das and we have to be aware. I always mention when Reb Chaim Brisker, great Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, used to give his Shabbos Shuvah drasha. He would say, Chaim ret mit Chaim. And Chaim is talking to Chaim, and anyone else who wants to listen in can listen in. We'll say some divrei musar tonight. I'm really collecting the thoughts that I had to for myself, and I think since we're all in this together, it hopefully will be beneficial to others as well, but I certainly don't mean to be talking down or condescending. It's an avoda that we should all partake in together, and I hope you'll take it as such. I had a very mundane experience that on further contemplation I thought actually is symbolic of the theme that I'd like to convey tonight. At the last Young Israel Rabbinic Conference, one of the Rabbanim who spoke said, Rabbis have to stay in shape. That was his big theme. So I have a treadmill that someone in the community gave me, and I like to run on it a few times a week, try to stay in shape. And I noticed something odd, that the belt, the conveyor belt that you run on the treadmill, was gradually shifting to the side. I didn't pay it much heed, but it shifted so far to the side with the passage of time that it got caught and broke. I couldn't use it anymore, it was getting stuck in the mechanism. So I called the handyman who we had to do some work in the house, and I asked him, I tried to fix it myself, I turned it on its side and tried to pull it back, but it was way too tight, couldn't budge it. So I called this handyman, he's a big strapping fella. I said, can you do something else in the house, but can you fix the treadmill for me? So he came after a few calls, And I said, just pull it out. Just pull it back to the middle. He said, no, let me take it apart. Let me see what the problem is. I said, no, please, just pull it down. Don't take it apart. Just take care of it. But sure enough, he had to open up the whole thing. He's analyzing over here, over there. It turned out, I thought the reason it had shifted was because I was running on a floor that was at an angle. He took it apart and he discovered that actually one of the rollers was broken. And the wasn't rolling smoothly because one of them had opened up and actually was at an angle, and that's what was causing the treadmill gradually to shift off to the side, and hopefully we'll be able to fix that. A mundane matter indeed, but it occurred to me that it's really very symbolic of how we sometimes approach Musa. We find that we're not on the right path, we're not going straight, and we try to just pull ourselves back. We realize we're a little bit off course, so we'll just pull ourselves back. But the problem is, if we don't go to the core of the matter, if we don't seek what is causing us to be going off, veering off in the wrong direction, we're just going to go right back where we were. We can make a temporary fixing, a temporary change, but we're going to shift back right to where we were. It's much wiser to get to the core of the problem. I was reading a secular book by Stephen Covey, who's one of the big self-help experts. A friend of mine in yeshiva showed his works to a famous mashgiach, who said, yeah, he touched on a lot of Torah concepts, and his big theme is that the recent literature in self-help has been very superficial, what he calls the personality ethic. Just fix the personality, the outward character. He says 150 years ago and before, people worked on the character ethic, trying to change not the externals, but the person himself. And of course, that's definitely a Torah concept. We don't want to just pull the belt back to the middle. We want to fix the problem to get ourselves really in line with where we should be heading, which is why I called the talk tonight Realignment, the Avoda of the 9 days. There's a trend that I've noticed within from society when it comes to discussing the 9 days and Tisha B'Av. It is acceptable and common to basically own up to the fact that we don't have the proper feelings at this time of year. We don't feel what we should be feeling. How can I get myself to feel what I should be feeling at this time? I've heard it in yeshivas. I've heard it in many places, the same recurring theme. We don't generally approach other observances that way. I never heard anybody say, well, Pesach is coming and I don't feel the Chag HaMatzos, or Sukkos is coming, I don't feel the Chag HaSukkos. But the truth is, it really is the same problem. We don't really experience any of the Yamim Tovim the way that we properly should. The truth is, the sense of Simcha that we're supposed to have is stronger than the sense of Avelus. I've mentioned in the past that, God forbid, a person is in mourning and a Yom Tov comes. Yom Tov cancels the mourning. The Avelus is canceled. Emotionally, that's something that's very hard for us to fathom, but the Simcha of Yom Tov, the Simcha that we're supposed to feel at a festive time, is supposed to be so strong that it cancels, it overrides a sense of grief and bereavement and of mourning, God forbid. Do we really experience Yom Tov in that sense either? I think our failure in the area of Avelus for the destruction of Yerushalayim is part and parcel with our failure to feel the Simcha of Yerushalayim at the same time. And the core of what I'd like to say to you tonight, it's really based on the teaching of the myth of Meliyahu, Eliyahu Dessler. And he talks about the Holocaust. And we know that when we observe Tisha B'Av, it really is a day of collective mourning for all the tragedies that Klal Yisrael has endured throughout the ages. In Kinuch Chaf Hei, the 25th of the Kinos that we say on Tisha B'Av, which is the first or the second that don't have to do with the Churban, with the destruction itself, so this is a kinah about the Crusades, about the destruction of three major Jewish cities. And the kinah goes through the various dates when these tragedies occurred. It's a kinah that begins, Mi yitain roshi mayim, if my head would be water, and those, the tears are so intense and so immense that it's as if my whole head is crying. And it recounts the various tragedies that happened in detail and with the dates when they happened, which were not Tisha B'Av. And then the Mekonein, the author of this kinah, says, Simuna alavavka misbeid mar lakashra. Take it upon your hearts to compose a bitter eulogy. Kishkula harigosim lis abelulis afra. Because the slaying, God forbid, of these Jews is equivalent for mourning lis afra, to throw dirt upon ourselves. Kisrefas beis elokeinu ha'ulam v'habira. Like the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. V'chiyein lahosif moed shever v'saveira, since we're not able to add more days of mourning. V'hein lahaktim zulasi la'achara. We don't even... If Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos, we push it later, not earlier. We can't even make it a day earlier. Tachas kein hayom levyasi ha'era. Therefore, we rouse ourselves today to eulogize and to cry for all of the tragedies of Klal Yisrael. So certainly when we approach Tisha B'Av, we're thinking not only of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, but all of the tragedies which really are a result of that destruction. So with that in mind, Rav Dessler has a piece in the fourth volume of the Michtav Me'Eliyahu. The piece is entitled Sakonas Haroa Or V'Dochehu, the danger of one who sees light and pushes it away. So Tekufosenu, the secret of our era. I'd like to read for you a few lines of what he says. He says, Tachlis kol davar hi ilios keli l'kedusha. The goal, the purpose of every entity, everything that we have in life, is to be a vessel, a utensil to bring about sanctity. When a person utilizes that entity the way it's supposed to be, to bring about sanctity, so the thing is niskadesh, it becomes holy. But if it doesn't, if it's not utilized, if one does not take advantage of what he has at hand for the purpose of kedusha, tuma mispashetas alav, then unholiness creeps in. Kechol asher hakedusha gavoa yoser, as per the greater potential for sanctity, hatuma garua yoser. When that sanctity is not realized, the tuma, the unholiness that creeps in, is also greater. Greater potential for kedusha makes greater potential for tuma, for unholiness. Hamesu avi avos hatuma, as we know, person who's passed away is the highest in the laws of Tumah, is the highest level of unholiness. Since the human being is the holiest entity, when the soul has left, the Tumah that creeps in is the strongest. And he says other concepts of Tumah, of unholiness, work in a similar fashion. It's interesting, the Vilna Gaon, in his commentary to Mishlei, says that this is really the reason why there's such a strong Yetzer Hara. We have a strong urge to chatter, to talk nonsense, dvarim b'talim. It's a very odd thing. The Chavetz Chaim talks about this as well. Where does the Yetzer Hara, where does the desire to speak idle chatter come from? Other desires we have in life, people like to have things, they like to eat, there are pleasures. But speaking idle chatter, dvarim b'talim. There's no rational explanation for it. A person doesn't gain anything from it. It's lost time. So the Vilna Gaon explains a very deep concept. He says, and this is an idea that the Zohar says as well, every mitzvah that a person does creates an aura of kedusha within the person. That's what the Mishnah means when it says, mitzvah gareris mitzvah. One mitzvah leads to another. A person does a mitzvah, it's as if there's an air of holiness that comes upon him, and it leads him to do more mitzvahs. The same is true of an aveir. If a person does a sin, so there's like a black aura upon him that leads him, that makes him desire to do more. And he says, the greater the mitzvah, the stronger the sense that the person develops to do more mitzvahs, the greater the aveir. The opposite is true. He says, Talmud Torah, the study of Torah we know is keneged kulam. It's the greatest of all mitzvahs. And therefore, a person who studies Torah, who uses the koach hadibur, the power of communication, to engage in Torah thoughts, Torah communication, that creates the strongest urge for more sanctity. But a person who utilizes the same koach, the same ability, the same capability for the opposite, for the lack of Torah, for idleness, for dvarim b'talim, so that creates the opposite effect. And since we're talking about the highest potential for holiness, it also creates the highest, or I should say the lowest, urging for unholiness. So he says, therefore, even though it's a sin that has no real rationale to it, engaging in idleness, there's no reason for it, but since it's the opposite of Torah, the Yetzirah creates is the opposite. Again, the same theme that the absence of Kedusha creates Tumah, creates unholiness. So he says that when we are put into Golus, the goal is to bring about sanctity. The Jews left Mitzrayim, Chazal tell us they were on the 49th rung, the lowest level of Tumah, and they had to climb up to the highest in order to be able to achieve the Torah. And this way he explains the period of Sfiras HaOmer. We observe the other season of mourning that we have earlier in the Jewish calendar is between Pesach and Shavuos, when the students of Rabbi Akiva died. Rabbi Shlomo Alkabetz, the author of Lecha Dod, he says, why did it happen then? Chazal tell us they did not have proper respect for one another. So why was it that they died during that period between Pesach and Shavuos? He says, I'm abridging a little bit, but he says, this was the time of preparation for receiving the Torah. We left Egypt and now it's time to receive the Torah. It's a time for the highest potential of preparing oneself for receiving the Torah. Since the students of Rabbi Akiva didn't capitalize on that properly. They studied, they learned from their Rebbe, but they didn't internalize the message completely. So the failure, when there is the highest potential for Kedusha, the failure to realize that Kedusha, the failure to achieve that sanctity creates the lowest level of Tumah, the lowest level of unholiness, which is why, unfortunately, that tragedy took place at that time. So with that introduction, he talks about our time. So tzakufasainu. I should preface by saying that if we talk about the suffering of Klal Yisrael, it would be audacious and inappropriate for someone my age to discuss what is the reason for these tragedies. Someone who didn't experience them. In addition, I should say that even Rav Dessler, who is a great one of the Gedol Yisrael, is talking at a general level. He's not, God forbid, saying that any particular person who experienced these tragedies was for this reason. He's addressing Klal Yisrael as a whole, what we can take from it, and it's important that we understand it that way. And he writes the following. Anu mishtomimim, we are awe-stricken. Al achurban hanorah shepakadnu b'dorenu. He's writing this in 1946. Of the terrible destruction that visited us in our generation. Anu shalim matzmeinu, we ask ourselves, ame asa Hashem kacha? Why did Hashem do this? What caused this great divine anger? Abel Nisbonein, he says, but we should think about it. Kol hatkufa shekadma lechurban. The entire period that preceded the destruction, ha'isazman hakolos shibud hagolos me'al am Yisrael, was a time of lessening of oppression from upon the Jewish people. Od lifnei me'a v'chamishim shana ha'yakla Yisrael kemenudim emusuavim ben yosh v'sevel. 150 years prior, we were menuda, means people who are excommunicated, or misuavim, and held to be disgusting among all the people on earth. And only more recently did they lighten our burden, and did they begin to equate our rights, v'dineinu, and our laws, l'matzavam heim, to their status. That's when the emancipation started. And more recently, he says, they started to talk about the potential for the land of Israel. The most astounding thing, that the nations of the world should bring up the possibility of giving the land of Israel to the Jewish people. Those same nations that before that held us, scoffed us. V'nechshavnu b'aynehem kipchusim shebepchusim, we were the lowest of the low. V'harei gam etzlam eretz Yisrael li eretz kedosha. And they also hold the land of Israel to be a holy site. They should be offering it to us. V'im kol zos nosan Hashem b'libam lachshav shiyatnu alanu. With all this notwithstanding, God put it in their hearts to consider giving it to us, and to make a declaration to that effect. It's clear, he says, that this period of emancipation was from Hashem, l'shamesh lanu hachana l'bias ha-Mashiach, was meant to be a preparation for the coming of Mashiach. U'letzarach zehu kol ol ha-galus me'aleinu. That is why the burden, the tremendous yoke of galus, was lightened from upon us. Ki ha'achonali mosa Mashiach dereshes mi'itano avoda ruchnis rabo. Because bringing about the Mashiach requires a tremendous spiritual undertaking. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter is quoted as having said, people go around saying, I'm excited because Mashiach is coming. He said, one should say, I'm afraid that Mashiach is coming. Not that we shouldn't want it to come. We're supposed to long for it to come every day, but it requires us to live up to what Mashiach is. So the coming of Mashiach is something that requires great purification to bring about. Kidei la'agi l'madregas ha'geulot, in order to reach the level of redemption. U'matzav shel tzaros tchufos hashpolos tadirios eina mesuga la'asogos dachach aliyah hanidrash. Constant affliction, tzaros, difficulties, does not give us the capability to bring about what Mashiach requires. Nimtza sha'ara ha'kadosha azos v'akahala b'matzavenu ba'u kadei sh'nishtamash b'hen l'tzarcha ha'kadusha. He says what that teaches us is that the new light that shone upon us was supposed to be a preparation to bring about the Mashiach. He says, v'kevan sha'afachnu as ha'matara, since we reversed it. U'b'makam l'hakir as ha'remez milamala l'zgona l'ga'ula mitoch simcha v'archavos ha'das. And in place of recognizing this sign and taking advantage of this potential, out of simcha, he says, out of joy, appreciating what we had, ishtamashni b'matzav ha'chodosh l'sarev b'goyim v'lulma m'ma'aseyem. We said, oh, it's finally, we have greater rights. Instead, we learned from the nations. The Ramban in this week's parsha is a pasuk. We're told when we go into the land of Eretz Yisrael, there were certain nations that were supposed to be eliminated, chase them out. To be morish, interestingly, can mean to inherit, to take over. It can also mean to chase someone else from that status. Supposed to be morish, chased out the idolatrous nations. Hashem says, "V'im lo so rishu es yoshei ha'aretz mipnechem." If you will not chase away the inhabitants of the land from before you, v'haya asher tosiru mehem, it will be those who you leave behind. L'sikim be'enechem v'litzninim b'tzideichem. Famous words. They will be pins in your eyes and thorns in your side. Rashi says, ha'menakros enechem. What does it mean, pins in your eyes? Sikim, it means something that pokes out one's eye. But the Ramban, it's a famous Ramban, the Ramban says that's the correct translation, but he disagrees as to the connotation. He says, true. V'ini baruch, kisikim kotzim chadim. It's true, it's something sharp that pokes. But he says it doesn't mean it pokes out the eye. It blinds the eye. Avakavana besikim beinechem lahatos eschem. To mislead you. He says we have the metaphor in the Torah of the eyes being blinded means to be misled. Velo siru velo savinu, you won't understand. He says, v'yelamdu eschem b'chol tavo seyem v'lavodes Eloheim. If you leave those idolaters behind in the land, they will teach you. They will teach us to be like them, and then they will turn around, Gulitzinim Bitsidechem. The same nations that will teach us to be like them, will cause us to sin, will turn around and punish us, will be the vehicle to punish us for following in their ways. Which has been, unfortunately, the cycle in Jewish history since the entire Golus. So Rav Dessler continues. He says, "Hare arva lanu asakana yedua shalachana lekedusha she'ena ba al tachlisa." It has attacked us. The concept of preparation for kedusha, for holiness, that did not reach its potential, that wasn't realized. Kemosha b'yanu le'el. He says, as I explained before, he says it took a long time. There was many decades or even centuries of this buildup, but ultimately it came to fruition. And he writes in the brackets, "V'im la'acher ha'churban ha'nora," if after this terrible destruction, "V'im sheshes u'ba'a shuv tekufa shel chesed," there will once again, if, he says, he's writing in 1946, if there will once again be a time of chesed, of kindness, where Hashem shows us breathing room, "Al lanu l'shanas b'ivalteinu," we should not repeat the same mistake, "El enakir es haramaza mila elo," we should recognize the signs from above, we should seize the light that is shown upon us to return with a complete tshuva. As Dessler said, the mistake that we cannot afford to make is to not capitalize on the time of chesed. We live in a medina shel chesed. We live in a time when we are able to observe the Torah in ways that our ancestors did not have near the freedom or the opportunity. He says it would be a terrible mistake not to take advantage of it. This is a lesson that we have to learn. And that's why I say the failure to experience Tisha B'Av and the failure to experience a Yom Tov at the opposite extreme are really the same failure, and it's causative. If we can't experience the Simcha from what we have, then God forbid that causes Tisha B'Av. In the kinnis, one of the first kinnis we say, Tisha B'Av morning, it's a kinnis that begins, A'adad chug shamayim, if I could soar up to the heavens. So we have a line, Evchana leil mi leil, umidbar mi midbar. If only I could distinguish one night from the other, and one desert from the other. It's a reference to, really, the original chet that led to Tisha B'Av. Leil mi leil, to distinguish one night from the other. When the Meraglim came back, when the spies came back from spying out the land of Eretz Yisrael, and they gave a negative report, and the Jews cried, oh, it's terrible. Chazal say, we cried at Bechiyah Shalchinam, a needless or gratuitous cry. Eretz Yisrael is a wonderful place. We cried out of lack of bitachon. For that gratuitous cry, Hashem said, you will cry on this night for a valid reason, for generations. Umidbar mi midbar, and one gullus, one exile from another. We complained about the exile when we went out of Egypt to traverse the midbar for 40 years. We complained about that gullus. It was a gullus where we had direct divine hashkacha, where we had the man, we had the water, we had the protective clouds, we had so many wonderful things, and we complained. So now we can distinguish between one midbar and another. Now, God forbid, we're in a gullus where we witness and see real tzaras. So we teach ourselves on Tisha B'Av, Evchana leil mi leil, umidbar mi midbar. Now we're able to discern, to distinguish between one night, the night when we cried for naught, versus the crying we did today, and one midbar from the other, the midbar Mitzrayim, which was not tzaras, God forbid, from the midbar that we experience today. So the realignment that I think we have to feel during these days is to get ourselves back in tune with the emotion behind Yiddishkeit, behind Torah. It really is something that we should do when we daven. It's hard to set aside time to just experience the emotions of the Torah, but when we daven, davening is an emotional experience. Reb Chaim Brisker explained, based on a Rambam, that if a person has kavana for the first bracha of Shemona Esrei, so at a minimal level that's acceptable, even if later his kavana wasn't there. But if he doesn't have the sensation that he's standing before Hashem for any word of Shemona Esrei, that's not davening. The entire davening must be with the sense of Dalif Neimiyah to Omid, knowing before whom we stand, and everything we do has to be with emotional content. That's the realignment. Happened to be when we traveled to this community for the first time, we rented a car, an inexpensive rental in Manhattan, and when things are cheap, there's usually a reason, and we had started out for a few miles on the highway when we noticed the car was really shaking and got above about 40 miles an hour. It was too late to turn back, and we drove the whole way here and the whole way back, and later when we gave it in, he told us, yeah, the wheel was slightly misaligned. No Dramamine could take care of the shaking in that car. When we're slightly misaligned, when three wheels are going one way, but one is going a little bit the other way, so there's no smooth sailing to the destination where we have to go. We have to have all systems forward. If we have a little bit of the emotion, but my mind is a little bit somewhere else, then we don't approach Avodas Hashem with the proper yashrus, with the proper single-minded focus. So in a season when the Avodah is to experience the emotion, that's what Avelus is, to feel the loss of Yerushalayim, it's an all-encompassing picture. It's not just the Avelus. Chazal say, Kol Misabel al Yerushalayim, Zocha V'ro B'Simchasa. Anyone who mourns the loss of Yerushalayim will merit to see its joy. And everyone points out, it doesn't say Yizke V'Yira, he will merit and he will see the joy, but Zocha, present tense, he is meriting V'ro and he is seeing it's simcha. So the Chasam Sofer explains it means because if we still mourn the loss of Yerushalayim, it means Yerushalayim is not dead. It means Yerushalayim is not gone. So that's how we are experiencing the simcha, because it means we know that there's hope. We believe that the Mashiach will come. But in light of the theme I'm expressing tonight, I would say another explanation, that a person who is misabel Yerushalayim means he feels something. Sometimes we're emotionally drained. We go to shul, we left our emotions at home. The emotions aren't there. A person who is Mis'abal Yerushalayim means he feels something. If there's regesh, if there's a feeling of loss for the lack of Yerushalayim, then there's a feeling of simcha for the presence of Yerushalayim. Simchas Yamtiv, the joy of Yamim Tovim, is really being lifnei Hashem. Every time in the Torah where it says v'samachli, you will be joyous, it says lifnei Hashem Elokecha. On the regalim, on the holidays, we would go up to the Beis Hamikdash. So nowadays we don't have it, but that's the joy that we're longing for, and that we have a trace of. The simcha of the positive times on our calendar is exactly the flip side of the avelus of Yerushalayim, so called mis'abel Yerushalayim. If we can feel something, if we can feel the loss, then we can also feel the positive. And again, the time to do this is in tefillah. People often say we have a hard time with kavana. We experience davening as mitzvah sanoshim ilumada. We get up and we daven and our minds are elsewhere. Rav Shalom Shvadron used to say, a mashal, a person is walking in the supermarket and he sees tuna fish is on sale. He goes and gets a can. All of a sudden somebody hits him in the chest. And he walks, oh, tissues, 5 boxes for him. And again, somebody hits him in the chest and he realizes he's in the middle of slach lana. His head is already... My mind's already in the supermarket, but so that's what we have to wake ourselves up. But the approach to kavana, I believe, is not perish hamilim. It's not focusing on the meaning of the words. We have to know what the words mean, but that's the second step. It's to approach tefillah with emotion. I'm just working on trying to think of what the words mean. That can be an uphill battle, but if we step forward in Shemona Esrei and literally view ourselves stepping into the Heichal, and Omed Lifnei Hashem, and we feel a total nullification of self, and we pour out all the tsaras, all the difficulties in our heart, the emotion is all there, then one doesn't need to work to maintain kavana. The kavana comes naturally. The gisha, the initial approach in Avodas Hashem, has to be the emotions. Chassidus was a movement that emphasized this. But one need not necessarily be a chassid. It's a pasuk in the Torah, Tachas Asher Lo Avadta Hashem Elokecha B'Simcha V'Tuv Leivav. We are punished because we don't observe Hashem b'simcha v'tuv leiva, with joy and with happiness. It's a pasuk in the Torah, and something that we should be focusing on. The irony, in a time of sorrow, we should be working on joy, because they go together. The Sfas Emes, in this week's parsha, and I should mention that Sfas Emes was a grandson of the Chedusha Harim, the great Ger Rebbe. The Chedusha Harim had terrible, terrible, terrible tragedies in his life, but he had one son who lived long enough to have the Sfas Emes. His grandson, who also was a great rabbi, so the Sfas Emes mentions a medrash. In the beginning of the medrash in this week's parsha, Hashem says to Moshe, you have to write down all of the stops. Write down the masaos, where we traveled through the deserts. The end of the 40 years, write down all of the encampments. And he says, why? Amar lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is what the medrash says. Hashem said to the Bnei Yisrael, Kol gedolei olam yaru baruch hu min sonehem. All of the great people, the great biblical figures, feared and ran away from their enemies. And points out Yaakov ran away, Moshe ran away, David ran away. We have in Tanakh different instances of people who fled from those who were pursuing them. But he says, "Call us in Mem Shana Shasisam Bamidbar. Those 40 years when you were in the desert, Lohinachti Eschem Levroach. I didn't allow you to run away. Every challenge that came up, they had to face it. They fought the battles." I made your enemies fall beneath you because I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was with you. Write it all down. It's supernatural that a nation could travel through the desert, a small nation, and beat all their enemies. How do we know that it happened? Because we read Elamasa. These are the stops. This is a review of everything that happened. Says the Sfas Emes, V'lochein nikva parsha zu bein ha-mitzarim. He says, that's why we read this parsha in this period known as bein ha-mitzarim, between the straits, the narrow straits between Shiva Asar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av. Because our Kadosh Baruch Hu, he says, is an oneh be'eis tzara. Hashem answers us in a time of difficulty. Uksiv min ha-meitzar karasi ka. Plus David HaMelech says, I call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu min ha-meitzar, from the straits, from the narrow straits. Ukriya hu dveikus. Calling out to Hashem is clinging to Hashem. Mitoch ha-meitzar nimtza derech dveikus el ha-borei. From the difficulty, from the tzara, we find a way to cling to Hashem. and he quotes a medrash in Parshas Vayeshanan, and one of the recent Gedolei Yisrael wrote a whole sefer based on this theme, that one of the 10 elements of tefillah is called batzar. Batzar lachom tzeucha, or batzar li ekrav, from the straits, from tzaras, to cry out to Hashem. That is a methodology of tefillah. That is a means of approaching tefillah. Dechsiv anochi erid imcha mitzrayma. Hashem goes with us into Golos. When we are with Golos, Hashem is with us, and therefore He's more attainable. I mentioned last week in the Eicha Shir that one of the great rebbes, I think it was the Mezritcher Magid, used to say on the pasuk Kol rodfeah hisigua bein hamitzarim. All those who pursued her got her in the straits. But you can read the word rodfeah kol rodef ka. Anyone who pursues Hashem, will achieve it bein hamitzarim. In this period of time, there's a special potential to be massive, to achieve things in ruchnius and spirituality that one cannot achieve at other times. So with Hashem's help, we should capitalize on this period of time to realign ourselves with the true sense of avodah. And as Rashi quotes in the beginning of the parasha, Medrash Rabbi Tanchuma, Rashi says, Rabbi Tanchuma had a different drasha on the recounting of these encampments. Moshal HaMelech, this is comparable to a king, Shahaya Beno Chole, his son was sick. Kolicha lemakom rochok lerfuasa, and he brought him to a place to have him healed. Kiven, and he got better. Kiven shayuchozun, when they were traveling back, hiskel aviv mona kolamasas. He pointed out, remember, we stopped here, we stayed there. Amalo kanya shanenu, we slept here. Kano karnu, we stopped to cool off over here. Kan chashashjus reshecher, here you had a headache, and so on and so forth. He's recounting after the fact, after the geula. We're recounting, able to look back and see how it was all masaos. It was a means of getting to Eretz Yisrael. We didn't understand it at the time, but looking back, we understand that it was all necessary steps in bringing Klal Yisrael to its fruition. I had a thought to mention specifically some of the, and to cite specific stories that we've seen in Eretz Yisrael and so on, that Tzaras that Klal Yisrael is experiencing. For various reasons, I decided not to do that, but it behooves us in this time to focus, to make the tzaras of Klal Yisrael today, which are really all aftershocks of the Churban. Churban is a davar hanimshach. There's a medrash in Eicha that says that one of the chachamim who lived in the generation of the Churban was able to interpret one of the lines in Eicha in 24 ways. He saw one of the curses in Eicha, 24 manifestations of it. And his student, his Talmud, saw it in 60 ways. And the Medrash says, not that the student was greater than the Rebbe, but the Rebbe, because he was close to the Churban, would darshan, he would explain the 24 elements of Churban, and he would cry and he would stop. But the Talmud, who was a generation removed, he could interpret it in 60 ways. I heard from a Rosh Hashiva of Zelig Epstein, he explained that what it means is that the manifestation of the Churban was only 24 in the first generation. But as we go further from the Churban, the attrition, the atrophy of Klal Yisrael, the spirituality that is lost and further lost, as we go further and further away from the Beis HaMikdash, it grows and grows, it becomes greater. So all the tzaras that we experience, chalila, they're all an outgrowth of Churban, of the destruction, and in Yitz Hashem with the Geula, we will see an amelioration and then ultimately a complete healing from all the tzaras of Klal Yisrael. And we look forward to Mitzvah Hashem to the time when we'll be able to look back, like the Medrash Tanchuma, looking back at the Masos after the Geula, and being able to understand and see how it all ultimately was for the good of Klal Yisrael. So let's take advantage of this season, and Mitzvah Hashem, there'll be a time when we'll be able to say, as the Navi Yirmiyah says, Rachein, Hine Yamim Boim Nu Hashem, there will be days are coming, Hashem says, V'lo Yomru Od Chai Hashem Asher Helos B'nei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim, and we will not say, by Hashem, who took us out of the land of Mitzrayim and brought us through those encampments in the desert. Rather, Kiyim Chai Hashem Asher He'elav Asher Hevi Ezer Beis Yisrael. But Hashem, who brought up the children of Israel, Me'eretz Tzafonim Mikol Haratzos, from all the nations, Asher Hidachtim Sham, B'Yoshvo Ad Masim, will come back to the land of Eretz Yisrael, and it's Hashem, it should be a true season of Menachem of Nechama, and Yeshua is for Klal Yisrael, and we should be zochot to see the Geula Hasidah, and Me'er V'Yameinu. Thank you.